Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
We're back. It's 12 after the hour. Thank you very much for joining me. Thanks for hanging out with me. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. I'm glad you're here. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors and a longtime member of our Brain Trust, now in her 11th year. How about that, Joan?
Huh? I can't believe it.
11 years. Now, well,
I
actually,
was a mere child when I started.
It's just been 10, but you know, even though it's just clicked over on the anniversary, you actually are in your 11th year with us.
I understand that, yeah.
Now, and, of course, it's okay when you're talking about tenure to use that term, but when you're talking about age, you know, I was talking to some guy the other day, and he said, you know, I'm to the age where I don't think about how old I am anymore. I'm thinking more now about how many years I have left.
Oh yeah, I understand that.
And there was an older guy nearby, and he said, "Well, he said I'm not even thinking about that. He said I'm thinking about how many good years I have left."
Ooh.
So it's all a matter of perspective, isn't it, Joan?
Yeah. Wow.
Joan, you and I are about to embark upon a journey that's fraught with peril here on this first page, because I'm not a stock market guy, and I promised the stock market guys that I wouldn't do stock market stuff if they wouldn't do small business, and so we got a deal. But you guys do that. You guys do some of that. You help people with their finances at Kiplinger, especially
right.
The Kiplinger personal finance magazine, and it also includes the letter. And so you guys have some comments about the stock market today, and so talk to us about what you think is the future wealth, where that's going to come from.
Right, and of course the question everybody's asking is, where is the bottom and when is the bottom of the stock market?
And you're a perfect bottom picker, aren't you, Joan?
I'm sorry? Oh,
you know,
yeah.
you know how to pick the bottom stuff.
Oh, that's right. Well, Kiplinger does. And we're not trying to predict whether we've reached bottom, but we do feel that there are a lot of good companies that are bargains right now, just because, you know, as a rising tide lifts all boats, so does a lowering tide sink all boats.
Well, exactly. Can I quote you on that, Joan?
No, please. I made that up.
Exactly. But you know the market, the Dow was down considerably yesterday, the biggest drop this month and this year. And at some point in time, you know, people are wondering, you know, are we really near a bottom? You know, I think a lot of people are willing to say, you know, obviously the old story about you can't catch a falling knife, or you don't want to try to catch a falling knife to know when to pick the bottom. I don't think most people aren't trying to pick a bottom, but they'd like to think that they might be no more than, you know, 10 or 15% off the bottom.
Right. Oh,
and
sure.
that it's either they buy when it's going down a little bit more, or they buy on the way back as it bounces back up. But with all the news, Joan, coming out right now, especially some of the financial sector news, J.P. Morgan and Citi and now Bank of America, et cetera, it's, you know, I think people are still worried that we haven't even found the bottom yet.
Well, I think that's true, right? That's right.
And so you know, the thing is, and so consequently, Joan, and this is what part of our problem is, isn't it? People who have cash are hanging on to their cash.
Right. And in fact, I just saw a story in the paper questioning, is America going to start becoming a nation of savers?
Yeah.
And whereas that sounds like a good thing, if you look at Japan, it could turn out to actually be a bad thing if we can't get those consumers spending.
Well, that's the thing. What is it? What's the consumer impact on the economy? What is it, like 60? I mean, like 70%, 70, 80%? I forgot what it is.
So.
It's a huge part of our economy. We have been a consumer economy. Now, Joan, the Fed will tell you that in, what is it, was it 05 and 06 maybe, or 06 and 07, for a 2-year period there, our savings rate was zero as a nation.
Right.
We spend every penny of discretionary income, and I guess maybe more, because if it's zero, I would assume that you'd have just about have to borrow a lot of money to get it to zero.
And we certainly did.
Exactly. And those are the chickens that are coming home to roost right now, aren't they?
Sure. Yes, that's right. And I think people felt wealthy, remember, because the stock market was going up, and if you had a little stock portfolio,
mm-hmm.
you saw your paper gains, that made you feel wealthier, and maybe you did borrow a little more on the credit cards or wherever in order to finance purchases because you knew you had that backstop.
And I think that there's a lot of young people out there, Joan, who have never lived through what we're going through right now.
Right.
That thought that, you know, making money's easy, mm-hmm. having a good job is easy. Everybody gets one of those. You know, having a new car, I don't have to wait on that. A new house, a nicer house than way nicer house than my parents. I don't have to wait on that. I think there's a lot of that going on, right? What's going on that I've been saying for a while now, a recession is the medicine that an economy has to take when it overindulges.
Right. Wow. Can I quote you on that?
Well, I may have actually picked that up from somebody else. I don't remember.
Oh,
but
darn.
It's one of those things that's probably been out there. But if you think about it, it makes sense. And so we just have to take this medicine. We have to deal with this thing and get through it. But it is troubling for a lot of people, you know, what to do with your money. And if you have any money, should you do local real estate? Should you be putting it in mutual funds? Should you be buying stocks? I followed a stock report this year for the first time, and to make a few purchases. And these guys who came highly recommended, had an incredible track record, and they didn't do a very good job this year.
Oh no.
And so who knows what's best?
The problem. Nobody really did
right.
do well this year.
But you know, you take some of these blue chip companies. I heard somebody the other day say that in the past, Alcoa, you know, you bought it at 25 and you could almost be guaranteed that you're going to make money on it.
Right.
Well, today it's probably under 10.
Oh gosh.
You know, and so but if you look at those numbers, Joan. It's hard to believe that number, that 950 or 10 or whatever the price is, it's hard to believe that that's not a great steal right now.
Yes, that's right.
And that's the point
point.
That's your point there. If you kind of know what's going on, fortunes are going to be made. It may be 5 years from now that you realize that, or maybe more. 20 after. Right back. We've got a lot more stuff to come after these messages with our good friend, Joan Pride. I'm Jim Blassingame. Stay with us. We're back. 23 after. Little Jimi Hendrix bringing us back. One of my favorites. Classic song. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. My website is smallbusinessadvocate.com. From there, you can find my blog. You can find my knowledge base, askjim.biz. The blog is jim.blog.biz. But just go to smallbusinessadvocate.com, and all that stuff's there, including the newsletter, which you can see. You can see a sample, by the way, of what it looks like and from a past newsletter, and kind of see what you've got to look forward to. And sign up. It's free. We'll send it to you every week, every Sunday afternoon. Get you ready for the week ahead. And, of course, the archives are there. The articles are there. The Brain Trust members are there. Lots and lots of stuff to help you have the maximum opportunity to be successful. And it's all free. We built it just for you and made it available with no barriers to entry. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and we're talking about money and the money you have, the money you wish you had, the money you want to make. And Joan, one of the things that's happened in the last several months has been a flight to safety, flight from equities into some of the treasuries, for example.
Oh, and treasuries are the hottest things right now.
I know a guy who told me, and he was really smart to do this, he pulled his money out in August and went straight to treasuries.
Wow.
And he was smart to do that because
yeah.
it was you know, that all the most of the damage, of course, a lot of the damage began, you know, a year ago, November.
No, but the really bad damage started, I think, in September, October.
It picked up again. That's exactly right. So he did good. But Joan, you guys report something that's very interesting here, and I've been hearing about this a little bit, and that is the potential for a bubble in treasuries. I mean, we know we had a bubble in commodities. We know we had a bubble in petroleum. We know we had a bubble now in housing because of the mortgage situation. We had a credit bubble, really, more than anything. Now, say it ain't so, Joan, a bubble in treasuries?
Well, we're saying that to forget treasuries because of their popularity. That people have been rushing to treasuries, and now they're overpriced.
Hmm. So those people who my friend who got into treasuries in August, maybe now's a good time to get out of treasuries.
Probably, yeah.
But now, of course, I'm not giving you that advice, folks. So that's want to make sure we say that. But anyway, it's interesting and. I heard somebody actually use the word 101K the other day. I'd never
101K?
Heard. 101K? Yeah, you know, as opposed to the 401K.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we used to joke back in 2001 and 2 about the 401K being a 201K.
Right.
But I heard a guy the other day say his 101K.
Yeah, I don't look at my balance anymore.
He just liked to get his 101K up to a 201K, what he was saying. But, Joan, let's move over to page 2 and talk about. Before we do, let's talk about these forecasts for just a minute. You got an outstanding forecast table here, Joan. GDP in 2009, you say 4.09 for the full calendar 2009. You're predicting that we stay in the negative side all through the year.
Now, and having said that, I think people are going to say, "But I thought Kiplinger said we were going to start recovering later in the year." Well, we are, but it's still not going to look rosy.
Well, but also this is an average that you're projecting
here. Exactly, that's my point. Right.
And so if we do, I mean, there are people who are predicting first quarter, the one we're in right now, is going to be ugly with a capital U.
Yeah.
And so that could literally be so bad that it puts the average in the tank for the rest of the year, even if we're positive. See what they're not saying here, folks, with a GDP of minus 1.8% for 2009, they're not saying that we won't be out of the recession in the second half. They're just saying the average is going to be there. So
you'll start to see the light at the end of the tunnel in the second half.
Right. Well, I don't want to wish our lives away, Joan, but I'm anxious to get to the second half of 2009.
I know.
I'm ready. I'm ready to get over there. Interest rates, Joan, you know, you and I have joked about, in a way, kind of in a wry smile and, you know, kind of whistling past the graveyard kind of thing about stagflation. But, Joan, we got low interest rates, thank goodness.
Right.
That's global now, by the way. The ECB cut their rate again recently, the ECB, the European Central Bank. Inflation is down to the point where some people are actually worried about deflation.
Yes.
So stagflation is not going to be nearby. But I do think, Joan, with all this stimulus money coming in, that how can that not be inflationary, especially with all this happening around the globe? How can that not be inflationary, say, two, three, four years from now?
Well, I think, and I think you're right, and I think our little escape valve right at the moment is, of course, oil prices.
Right.
Because that's the big difference. Back in the 70s when we had stagflation, one of the big drivers of that was the oil crisis.
Right. We had high unemployment.
Right.
We had, the economy was bad, but we had high oil prices. We also had high interest rates, Joan.
Yeah.
Especially in the latter part of that decade. So the point we're making here, folks, is that there's an awful lot of good fundamentals that we have right now, Joan.
And the Fed has room to maneuver because inflation is low. And that was the Fed's problem back in the 70s. It didn't have the room to maneuver. In fact, to strangulate inflation, Chairman Volcker had to keep raising rates. And he was probably the most unpopular man in America. But what else was he going to do?
Well, and the thing is, Joan, in those days, they had two tools. They had a hammer and a saw.
Right.
They had interest rates and money supply.
Right.
And that was basically what they showed up with.
Yeah.
Today, Bernanke has got a truckload of tools he's using now. He's really expanded the array of tools that the Fed uses. He's become very creative in that way. So folks, I'm going to come back to what I've been saying for a long time. The biggest problem we got is between our ears. It's the real estate between our ears. We got a problem with that. We got to fix that. Quick break. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Does anybody really know what time it is?
He's the man Talkers Magazine says is one of the most important talk show hosts in America.
We tell you over and over again that you're wonderful, and you just don't get it. What's wrong with you?
He's Jim Blasingame, our small business advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Thanks very much for staying with me. Thanks for hanging out with me. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. We're glad you're here. If you've been listening already, thank you especially for that. Joan Pride is with us. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, moving over to page two, one of the things that you guys point out is, in you guys are just little Pollyannas here, aren't you? Just bringing us all this little, all this great news, reminding us. Of course, it's really just reminding us of what we already knew, and that we've had another month of severe job losses. And you know, one of the reports I saw back in a month or so ago was, you know, of the 500,000 jobs that were lost in that period that they recorded, I did a little more research into it and found out that about 40 to 45% of those jobs that were lost came from small businesses.
Wow.
And that was disturbing to me to know that it was that high of a percentage. But
right.
but Joan, if you think about it, Joan, that's really kind of good if you really look at the numbers, because over half of the employees in America work for small businesses. So if we're having layoffs and we have less than half of the employees are coming from small business, that kind of tracks pretty much, if you think about it, with what I expect small business owners to do. And that's to, you know, we're the kind of folks that you know, we hire late and or we hire early and lay off late, you know, and
right.
So
sure.
we're not the first ones, because we don't like it. We don't like dealing with the whole human resources thing anyway, Joe. Most of us don't, and we don't even like the hiring process.
Well, plus if a big business lays off 100 people, big deal. But if a tiny business lays off 100 people, that could be half the workforce.
How about a tiny yeah. business laying off one employee?
Right.
We hate
exactly.
We hate it, Joe. We
exactly.
hate.
Right.
We loathe having to fire somebody. We loathe.
You.
We don't even like firing somebody when they need to be fired.
Right.
But we just don't even like the whole process, the whole yeah. thing at all. And then to lay somebody off who's not done anything wrong, who's done a good job perhaps, but because we just have to do it, that is the, I'm telling you, there is more pain in small businesses laying somebody off than any other part of the pain that's being experienced in the economy, other than the people who actually have been laid off.
Right.
Have to say that. But anyway, it's you know, and Joan, the job loss thing, as you guys point out, and as we know, that's just getting started. I mean, that ball is going to continue to roll, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. No question about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah. But what do you think, what are you guys reporting about what the government's going to do to help that? Talk to us about some of that.
Well, you mean in terms of the job losses?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Well, tax cuts mainly.
Yeah.
Now, the thing about this, though, is, you know, we're right in the middle of trying to negotiate, and it's been interesting to watch. You know, President-elect Obama has offered a whole bunch of ideas, and a primary among them has been this idea of a new tax credit for businesses that create jobs.
Right.
Now, unfortunately, he got a lot of pushback from his own party, and he's backed away from that. So they're now trying to go back to the drawing board and figure out another way to get that going.
Joan, I hope they don't try to pursue the Section 179 things anymore. And by that, folks, that's the direct expensing provision, where currently I think it is, John. I think it's still 250, isn't it?
Right. Oh, I think they'll extend that.
Up to 250. Well, extending
yeah.
is fine, but
okay.
What I'm getting at is what I hope they don't do is they don't say, okay, if we think $250,000 worth of expensing in a year for capital spending is good for small business, why isn't $500,000 a year good for them? And let's make it $500,000, and boy, that'll really create things
yeah.
get things going. Well, guess what, folks? That's not going to work, Joan. That the Section 179 thing is at its maximum, because most small business owners don't buy $250,000 worth of stuff in a year. Most of them don't need to. Even if they did, they don't need to. And if they needed to, they at this very moment, it'd have to come from financing. Because in fact, I'd recommend if they had the money to finance it, because they don't need to use long-term capital items with operating cash. And so they'd have to finance it. And Joan, that's not a good picture right now.
Right. That's very true.
So the whole Section 179 thing is, in my opinion, is not the way to go. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the best thing is. I like the tax credit for hiring. But Joan, don't forget this. A lot of small business owners aren't going to be profitable this year.
That's right. Yeah, so what's a credit going to do for them?
What are you
going to
do?
Right, exactly. Right.
So that whole, they're going to have to be very creative, and they're going to have to plug in. They're going to have to talk to some people who really know what's going on out there in the job creation market. And Joan, there are not too many people inside of Washington who know that answer. They're going to have to get outside the Beltway for that information. 20 till. Stay with us. We'll be right back. We're back at 17 till. Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're visiting with our good friend Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and their website is kiplinger.com. That's an outstanding website, but if you go there, you can find out not only about the things they have on their website, you can find out about their publications, like the one Joan and I work off of every week, the Kiplinger Letter, which has been around for over 85 years now and still rocking and rolling, getting better all the time. And that's the weekly publication, comes on Friday afternoon.
But that's not even my favorite.
I know. And then we have these biweekly letters, the four biweekly letters now, the California Letter, the Tax Letter, the Agriculture Letter, supporting our outstanding farmers out there, some of my heroes too, and then the Biofuels Letter. But that Tax Letter, you kind of like that one, don't you, John?
I love that Tax Letter. You know why? Because it pays my bills.
and then, of course, they got that magazine thing.
Yes. It's called Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine, formerly Changing Times.
And you can find it at newsstands as well. But
yep.
What about that phone number, John?
Well, you can't find the letters at the newsstand. So if you want those, you've got to call our customer service number, which is 800-544-0155.
And they still got that free trial thing, right?
Yes. Oh, yes.
So check that out, folks. And also Kiplinger.com. You can subscribe right online there. Joan, one of the things, we're talking about the economy. One of the things that's been interesting is specialty apparel sellers have been having a tough time. Regional department stores, some of them have already gone under. Goodies is a department store across Middle America that was based out of Knoxville, Tennessee. I think they closed up, just completely went kaplooey recently. And I heard somebody the other day talking about dollar stores, the discount dollar stores like Dollar General and Fred's and those kinds of things across the country. And they were talking about, some analyst was talking about which one he liked and which one he didn't like. And he said he liked this one, but he didn't like that one. And they said, what's the difference? He said, the other one sells apparel. This one doesn't. I like this one.
Ah.
So anything to do with apparel, apparently.
Hmm.
Joan, I haven't bought any new duds lately. Have you?
Oh, all the time.
Yeah. Well, I haven't, and so I wonder if that's part of it. Another thing is, I think is very interesting, Joan, is bless their hearts, the grocery stores, you guys point out, really ought to be doing pretty good right now because...
Well, people need food.
And they're not eating out as much.
That's right.
So they're cooking. As you say, they need food, so they're mm-hmm. cooking.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're eating more meals at home. And
right.
I think my family... Are you eating more meals at home, Joan?
Absolutely.
I think I am, too. So a lot mm-hmm. of folks doing that. Another thing you point out, Joan, that the administration, the Small Business Administration, you guys predict, and I think you're right, are going to play a bigger role in the economy and in hopefully getting small business owners revved up, because in a Democrat administration, more than so than in a Republican administration.
Right, and we say under Bush that funding fell for the agency, and there were a lot of controversies and things like that, but... Now, I don't know that the new designee to head the SBA, Karen Gordon Mills,
yep.
but we say she has a wealth of experience investing in small business.
Well, she's a venture capitalist.
Ah. And she's from Maine. She knows the financing side.
Oh, yeah. No, I've got some news on that. She's a venture capitalist, which we knew pretty quickly. But I found out recently, Joan, that I've been told, and I need to reconfirm this, but I've been told that her family is the Tootsie Roll family.
Ooh.
And so that means that she knows what it's like to make a payroll. Her family at least knows what it's like to make a payroll. So that's good. The other good thing about Karen Mills, I think, Joan, by the way, I was told this week from some of my moles in the SBA that that she could be confirmed as early as next Friday.
Wow.
How about that?
That's pretty good.
That'd be really quick for an SBA, because the last time under the Bush administration, we didn't even have an SBA administrator until August of that year.
Gee.
It took that long to get a guy on board and get him confirmed. And so they think this lady may get confirmed next week. I've been told by my moles that from people who know her and know about the SBA that she's going to be a great administrator. I'm looking forward to working with her myself, as I have now with several administrators all the way back to the 90s. But also, Joan, she knows as a venture capitalist that all small business owners aren't venture capital prospects.
Right.
Most aren't. So I'm excited about this. I hope she lives up to what we think. Joan, here's more bad news here. You guys are talking about the banks, the credit card write-offs. You're saying we still got a ways to go before that even peaks.
I'm afraid so. The write-offs will hit a record 9%, reflecting their abandoned hopes of recovering losses. So that's not good. You know, we haven't turned the corner yet there.
And see, Joan, that's just a further depressing of the credit market, the freeing up of the credit market. The more banks are covering up those kinds of losses, dealing with those kinds of losses, that doesn't make them feel froggy about extending more credit to people.
That's right.
So that's going to make 2009 a tough year for credit, it seems to me, if that's the case. But we'll continue to keep reporting on that, folks, for you. Joan, let's move over and talk about what's going to happen with what you call the lobbying game.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the things that you think the 111th Congress are going to be dealing with?
Well, I kind of like the way we describe this. We say business groups are mulling new dance steps. and we say they're going to support what they can and swallow what they must.
So you think they're going to say discretion is a better part of valor? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I think they kind of have to, sure.
Yeah. Well, the deck is stacked pretty heavily in favor of people who typically aren't friendly to businesses. And so we'll come back and we're going to talk about a couple of the issues that are going to be on the table and several other things that we'll talk about with our good friend Joan Pryde, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Tintel, stay with us. We're back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, small business advocate. And folks, I want to report on my comment about the designated incoming proposed SBA Administrator Karen Mills. My crack research team has informed me here that her father and mother, Melvin and Ellen, are and have been for a long time the CEO and the chairman and CEO and president COO, respectively, mother and father, of Tootsie Roll Industries, which her mother's family bought from the original owner in 1935. Joan, that's a lot of generations of making payroll.
I'll say.
So she's not new to the challenges of a tough economy and dealing with the issues that small business owners have to deal with. And so that's going to be good. I'm looking forward to talking to her about that. You know, we've had every administrator who's been there since 1990s on the show, and we've worked with them closely, so I'm looking forward to getting her on. Joan, let's move back over and talk about some of the dance steps that you point out that the government, that business is going to have with the government. One of the things that they absolutely positively are going to fight is the Employee Free Choice Act, or also called the card check bill. You guys point that out.
That's right, and that I realize that's quite an important one. And it'll be interesting to see how that one turns out.
That has one element in it that is really going to make it tough to get past, Joan. It has one very, really a defect. And that is that the essence of the Employee Free Choice Act is actually not free choice at all, because it does away with the secret ballot. The essence of it is, and so I think that's the kind of thing that Americans are really pretty not going to like. Another one, though, that you point out, Joan, is the Family Medical Leave Act.
Right, and that, you know, that's been around for a long time, and there had been so much talk about proponents strengthening it, but that has never happened during the Bush administration. So I'll be interested to see what happens with the Democrat president and Congress.
Well, I think the issue there, Joan, is if I'm correct in saying that the current bill, the current act, the current law, applies to 50 or more employees.
Right.
And so I actually know companies who for that reason, Joe, for that reason alone, keep their employee count at 49 or less.
49. Oh.
Yeah. That's stupid to have to do that. And so I think that's what I understand. That Ted Kennedy, for example, is trying to do is get that number dropped to something like 25 employees. And so that's what they're fighting. So those are some things. But they also know they're going to have to give in on other issues, Joan. They're not going to be able to get their whole basket of goodies. They're going to have to both sides, I think, Joan, are going to have to give up something.
They've got to pick their battles, sure.
Yeah, exactly.
Sure.
Joan, let's move over and talk. One of the things I thought was interesting in your letter on page 3 on the energy thing here, well, you were talking about turbines and hydroelectric power generating.
Right.
You guys are pointing out that more and more dams are being used and are going to be used over the next decade, and an increase by 50% of hydroelectric power.
Well, that's what we say over the next 10 years. That's pretty amazing.
How about this sentence? It can cost less to replace old hydro systems than to build wind turbines. How about that?
Yeah, I didn't know that.
And, you know, Joan, if the dam's already there and the water's already there, we aren't creating anything unsightly in the air like a wind turbine, which is the objection a lot of people have to those things.
Right.
Also, Joan, was it you guys telling me? Yeah, you guys pointed out something about the ocean bed generators.
Oh, right here, absolutely.
Yeah.
Think that they're going to get going over the next decade, and but these would be mainly for coastal cities, you know, cities with, I think we say, within a few hundred miles of U.S. coasts.
But you're saying long cylinders anchored to the seabed could harness enough energy in the eddying waters, waters coming and going with the tides, I guess, to power a few dozen in a 1 square mile area, Kiplinger reports, could supply 100,000 homes with power all year long. Joan, how about that?
And not for much money, too.
See, that's the kind of story that should be in your biofuels letter.
Okay.
Which is why I think you should change it to alternative fuels letter. I'm going to get that done, Joan, before I die.
Well, I don't have control. Maybe you do.
I'm going to make a phone call. I'm going to check on that.
Go ahead.
Joan, hey, thanks for being here. It's good job today, as always.
Thank you, Jim. Thanks a lot.
I appreciate you. Appreciate your time and your steadfastness, and we're very proud of all you guys do at the Kiplinger Letter.
Well, thank you, Jim.
Thanks. See you next week.
Okay.
Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. I'll get that out in a minute. I got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I want to remind you, today, be guilty of committing a random act of kindness. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.